Radio.
Fostering Vocations in the Heart of the Parish. A presentation by Father Morgan Batt at the Proclaim 2016 Conference. Brought to you by Credio and XT3.
Thanks for coming in. There's only half the workshop here, so I'm going to leave that door open so other people can come on in, if that's okay. Just ignore the bathroom. Adam and I, we run the vocations team in Brisbane, along with another team of Rosalia, Pat, Chris, and Kate. And it's a rather large team. There's only one priest, two married men, and the other one's a single, and then there's a married woman. We would speak to 10 to 15,000 young people a year about where does God call them in their life. Part of our vocations ministry is to be anywhere young people or anywhere the church gathers if we can. We're the only vocations team at this conference. It tells you something. It tells you something. And vocation is, we'll talk about it later, but we're trying to make it into a parish setting for you. How do we understand a parish setting in vocations? You're laughing. I know why. Maybe I don't. I think sometimes vocations is very hard for people. And, you know, how do we get young married people, you know, to fall out their vocation and live their vocation? Single people, how do we get them to live their vocation? Religious, how do we get people into the religious life, into the priesthood? A number of people say to me, you know, Father Morgan and Adam, if you don't get priests, the whole church is going down because of you. And sometimes we feel like we get stuck on an elevator. This is the year of mercy. And I'd like to explore very briefly two words with you. This is adult education, but I'm going to use a whiteboard if that's okay. I love this word, misericordia. And I love mixing up with words and trying to get words and how I understand it. And I love this word because if you split it in two, it basically means misery or pain that we have, or where we're not going, or where we don't understand, and the heart. And part of parish vocation ministry is being able to share the misery or the pain in each other's hearts. Yeah, our church needs vocations. We need vocations to the single, the married, religious and ordained life. Ordained, by the way, is priests, deacons. Religious is brothers, nuns, sisters and consecrated virgins. The married life and the single life, by the way, is not waiting for something better to happen in your life. It's actually some people live a single life as a calling from God. So it's how do you share that pain in the heart? How do you understand that pain? The other word is we often talk about evangelization. Evangelization actually comes from a mixture of Greek and Latin word, euangelion. Now, how do I get that? Evangelization actually comes and it means share the good news. The good news, the word the good news in Greek is actually euangelion. And if you understand Greek at all, you, where we get the word Eucalypt from, where we get the word Eucharist from, actually means life. And the word angel is the proclamation from God, God's word. So the word of life is the good news that comes to us. In fact, years ago I was climbing Mount Everest and I was nearly up near the top about to celebrate Mass and I was writing in the snow as I was waiting and the word Eucharist actually comes from that. Comes from life, charism and Christ. The thanksgiving of our life and our charism in Jesus Christ, is Eucharist. So the word euch helps us understand euangelion, which helps us understand the Greek word for good news, which means to evangelize, or life. We may share the misery in each other's heart, but we also share the life of Christ. And that's basically at parish level. Pope Francis said this at World Youth Day in Poland just a couple of weeks ago. Jesus is the Lord of risk, of the eternal more. Following Jesus demands a good dose of courage, of readiness to trade in the sofa for a pair of walking shoes and to set out on a new and uncharted path. He basically said, get off the couch. And that's what the young people came back saying. The Pope told us, get off the couch, get a pair of walking shoes and get out there. Basically, the Pope was saying, let's not have a comfortable church. But let's have a church that's actually prepared to get up and move. Perception. How you understand me, how you understand young people, how you understand old people, how you understand, is single life actually a vocation? We don't know, or do we? It all comes down to perception. This went viral about 6-8 months ago. And the number of people who posted, I actually posted this on my Facebook, and the number of people who posted, young people are terrible, aren't they awful, look at that, mobile phones, and they got one of the greatest works of art, The Night Watchman, and they're all on their mobile phones there. But the other side of the story of that was, the art teacher had just stood them up in front of that painting and given a 10-minute lecture about the painting, said, now we'd like you to go to the app site of the museum, the art gallery, and check it out online and interact with their online teaching about the art gallery and this famous painting, The Night Watchman. And so someone took a photograph just as they were doing that. Perception. All this technology is making us antisocial. Perception. This is one of my favourite photographs. Woodstock. 500,000 people gathered in a dairy farm about 40 years ago and celebrated one of the most licentious gatherings of young people in the 60s, 70s, as they had drugs and sex and rock and roll and carrying on, and they thought it was the most diabolical thing or the greatest thing ever. This couple here were photographed and became iconic for Woodstock. In fact, they appeared on the Woodstock album. If you don't know what an album is, it used to be a big DVD, okay? Or a CD. Here's the couple, Nikki and Bobby Eckeline, married 2 years after Woodstock. They have 2 sons and live not far from the concert site. They're still married 40 years later. That's that couple on the front cover. Perception. We can often think that we know what's going on with our parish, or what's going on with vocations and young people, but it's the big picture. I often say to people, take a balcony perspective. Take a balcony perspective is stand on a balcony and look. Don't say anything, just look, observe, see what's going on. And ask the question, we go, what is going on? I was at Proclaim 2014. And I listened to a wonderful lectures, keynote, and workshops about how parishes aren't engaging young people. And everyone I could talk to was saying, yeah, we need to get young people involved in the church. That night, there was a youth fest that was going to have tomorrow night. Adam and I were basically the only ones from the conference at that youth fest. The 500 participants weren't there. They all went home. You made a sham of Proclaim. I'm not here to blow you up. I'm not here to make you feel guilty. But perception is extremely important. Yeah. And everyone's dead and went home.
So what does the word vocation actually mean? In our current society, in our current climate, it's become very aligned with career. But actually, the word career comes from the same root word, which means to journey. So what does the word vocation actually mean? If you Google it, which Seneca did, these are all the different definitions, all the synonyms that came up after Google searching it. But our faith tradition actually holds that it comes from the Latin word vocare, which means it's a calling. Our vocation is our calling. It comes from God. And it's about how we live our life in response to God's love for us. Or in the more vernacular, to quote Will Smith, it's about that sense of there's something more to the way we live our life, our work and our family, but there's a deeper meaning underneath that. And our vocational calling comes from our baptism. When we're baptized, we become part of the body of Christ. And that's that image that St. Paul uses in his letter to the Corinthians. It's an image then that the Second Vatican Council adopted and said that all the baptized make up this body of Christ. The church isn't just the buildings we worship in. It isn't just a hierarchy, but it's all the baptized that make up this body. And as we live and act in this world, we are Christ's body alive and active today. And so we live our vocation by responding to our baptism. That is what our vocation is. And what that means is that we're not lone rangers. I think sometimes we get this image that we receive our own personal divine mission and we go and live that out. But it's not that we're lone rangers. Rather, like in Luke's gospel, where Christ calls the 12 from the crowd of believers, our vocation is our calling from the crowd, from the body of Christ. And what that means then is, as the crowd, as the body of Christ, we call people from within our communities, from within our parishes. We call forth their gifts and their talents and their skills, and we call them forth to serve the needs of our church. We're called from the crowd. And what that looks like then is these four states of life, which aren't vocations themselves, but the expression of that vocational call. The single life, which as Father Morgan has mentioned, it's not being stuck in the friend zone, but it's an intentional choice to live that single life, to be able to be where the church needs. The married life, the religious life or consecrated life, and the ordained life. And discernment is that process of separating apart. In the individual, it's that journey of separating apart the options to find that path to live that vocational call. But as communities, we're also called to discern. Discern with the people in our parish, especially our young people. And we'll emphasize young people in this presentation. That's because they're the largest group of people that are in this discernment, in this time when they're trying to figure out where they're going and who'll serve our church and how they'll serve our church. And so we discern with them, helping them to understand the call and helping them to understand how they might respond to it.
Many years ago, Pope John Paul II came to Australia in 1986. And in 1986, he also came to Brisbane, where I'm from. And up in Brisbane, I was put in charge, basically, of looking after him when we were downstairs in the bleachers. Now, we're all there, and that's, by the way, that's me with hair, okay? And these are other priests there. But I remember John Paul II being there, and he just, I was standing by myself as he was walking out the room, and he said, I was standing there, and I went, are you nervous? I said, yes, Your Holiness. He said, me too.
Yeah.
And what just delights me about that is that Pope St. John Paul II was a human being given a grace of office. And I think it's the grace of office that we often diminish. The grace of office in marriage. Some people say, I don't know if I can get married. God will give you the grace of that office. I don't know if I can remain single. God will give you the grace of that office. I don't know if I could be a religious. God will give you the grace. I don't know if I could be a deacon or a priest. God will give you the grace of that office. So discernment and saying, be not afraid. Pope John Paul II often said, be not afraid. And in fact, Pope Francis has taken that up in big ways. The guy in the back is now one of the new bishops of Sydney, Bishop Anthony Rendazzo, just here. Welcome. So Pope Francis is also a great human being, the leader of 1.6 million people, a billion people, 1.6 billion people, and he's just a wonderful human being. Be not afraid actually occurs in the Bible 365 times, one for every day of the year, where God says to you, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid of what God might be calling you to. Adam's the executive manager of the Vocations Office of Brisbane. I'm the Vocations Director. We go around parish after parish after parish, and we stand there in a parish, and one of my opening lines when I'm preaching vocations in parishes, put up your hand if you're married. As all these people put up their hands, I go, see, there's not a vocations crisis in the church. Look at that. I said, put up your hand if you're single. All these people put up their hand. No vocations crisis in the church. I said, put up your hand if you're a nun or a priest. Well, one, two. And sometimes our biggest challenge is to get people to understand vocation is not just about priesthood, it's about your baptismal call into a state of life. So be not afraid to live it.
So this is just a snapshot of my story. People often ask me, how does a young layperson end up managing the vocations office? Well, I've spent 10 years in ministry. When I was in high school, I was deeply involved in my parish and my youth group, and I had several people around me that started mentoring me and guiding me, and they prompted me to then think about engaging in full-time ministry. I ended up volunteering with Net Ministries Australia for 4 years, and what that involved was travelling around Australia in groups of teams of young people, sharing my testimony of faith in high schools and parishes, youth groups. And it was in that experience of sharing my faith constantly that the question of priesthood got asked to me. I ended up in the seminary. I spent a year there studying theology, learning what it meant to be a priest, living with brother seminarians. An incredible experience. I was 19 and the youngest seminarian in the whole of Queensland. Spent a year there, and after a year discerning with then Monsignor Indatto, feeling like my call was taking me in a different direction, which prompted me now to join the vocations office, where we do have a cardboard cut out of the Pope and sometimes put party hats on it. But it's been a life of ministry. I've just completed a Bachelor's of Theology as well, and knowing that that is my calling, my passion in life. But with all of that as well, I got married 4 months ago. And so I get to now bring all of that passion and combine it with that life experience of daily life with my wife, which is an incredible experience for me.
Usually when he says that in schools, and then we go, do you hear it? A snapshot of me. Let me introduce myself. I've been a priest for 25 years this year, so it's my silver jubilee. Ordained in 1991. St. Stephen's Cathedral. I actually spent 3 years on exchange in Tasmania. I was a parish priest of Port Arthur, Richmond, during the massacre in 1996. I lost my whole first communion class that day. They were executed. And my parish fell apart. Not only the parish priest of Port Arthur, I've also been a military chaplain for the last 15 years. I've served in numerous overseas deployments. I actually get sick of people shooting at me and wanting to kill me. Okay, but go drive in Brisbane, it's the same thing. But as a military chaplain, I've been on numerous tours, and I'm now a reserve chaplain and a staff chaplain of Queensland. I'm also a recognised international mountaineer. My aim is to climb the highest peak of every country in the world and celebrate Mass on top, and I've done 181 countries today. So we talk about the last workshop I was in was self-care. I believe in that a lot. So that's a snapshot of who I am. Up one of the mountains I was climbing was a little country called Saint-Pierre-Miquelon, which is over in Canada. Most people don't even know it exists, that's okay. But I came back off the mountain, I was having dinner at this restaurant. And I'm sitting here, this is my table here, and I'm watching this father and son. I know they're father and son, because this young lad lifted his head and said, Mon Père. And I went, okay, it's not the parish priest, it has to be his father. And what was sad is I sat there, I wanted to actually video this. Because what was happening was the young man would lift up his head and look at his father and just shake his head. And he'd go back to eating. And then the father would lift up his head and go back to eating. I wanted to take a video, but I thought it too creepy, so I just took a quick photograph. But what was sad was a father and son couldn't talk to each other. You want vocation? You want married, single, religious, ordained? Well, let's talk about families. Families are the basis of it. Families are where wars are fought and where peace is given. Families are where we encourage one. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. I had an epiphany 3 weeks ago. I love going back to Greek and Latin and different languages and trying to work out. And I thought as the director of vocations, I should go and work out what this actually means. Follow me and I'll make you a fish for people. I'll make you a fisherman of men. And I was blown away when I actually went to the Greek, and that's not what it says. You know what the Greek says? I will make you to become fishermen of people. So it's not a job description, I'm going to make you go do something. It's about changing the interior of who you are. I will make you to become, I will give you the grace to do this. I will make you to become like. It's not just a job. It's God calling you forth to change the whole of who you are as a person. I will make you to become. I will give you the grace of office. I found that quite profound, actually. Old ways won't open up new doors. I'm not saying that we have to have new cliches and new ways of doing everything, but maybe the old ways need to be reassessed quite well. Give you some statistics. This is from the 2011 census. I know we're in the process of doing the 2016 census, but hopefully we'll get the information. Don't dismiss the census. It's very important. Give you an idea. In Australia in 2011, the Catholic population was 25%. That means every bus, every shopping centre, every petrol bowser you stood at, one in every four people were Catholic. Just know that when you go home, when you get on the bus, when you're in your car, that one in four people is Catholic who's standing around you. In the 1947 census, 63% attended Mass. Some people had this idea that pre-Vatican II, everyone went to Mass. No, 63% did. Even knowing that's quite profound. 2011, it's 10%. For Brisbane, the Catholic population. For Sydney, the Catholic population. 53% of youth in Australia do not attend a Catholic school. 53% of Catholic youth do not attend a Catholic school. That means if we're not somehow engaging with the secular or the state system, there's half of our young people are not being ministered to or heard from. 53%. I'm not denigrating Catholic schools, please get me right. I'm just giving you a statistical census. In the Catholic population, it used to be the Italians were the largest ethnic population in Australia. But in 2011, Filipinos became the largest ethnic population in Australia. I wonder what 2016 will say. So we went from Italian to Filipino. The largest age group in 2011 were the 10 to 40, or Catholics, were the 10 to 14-year-olds. By the way, that's the largest age group of Catholics, were 10 to 14 in 2011. Not your 70-year-old granny in the pew. Everyone thinks that's the largest population. It's not. If we're not putting money and focus in our vocation, married education, single education, religious and ordained education in our youth, then something's wrong. It's 13 to 17-year-old now. So this year and next year, some of the largest Catholic population are about to leave school. If we're not getting vocations, priesthood out of that, something is wrong with our approach. By the way, do you know what the largest Catholic work job is? Concreters. Concreters make up the largest Catholic. Now, what I mean by that is any population group, if they went through and said all these different groups and people who work, concreters happen to be the largest Catholic. I think it's because they're Italian. Okay, but I'm not too sure. Can I give you this understanding? This is important, my friend. The largest workforce is tech and trade. How many Catholic chaplains are at TAFE colleges in Australia? I did a Google search. You know what I found? Zero. There are no chaplains to TAFE colleges in Australia. And if concreters and the largest workforce is tech and trade, we're not even hitting the mark. These TAFE colleges actually belong to parishes, by the way. They're situated in, universities are situated in parishes. So are TAFE colleges. Just even simply, I go up and there's a TAFE college not far from where I work. Live, and I go up and I put one of our posters on the notice board every month. Just put it on the notice board. It gets ripped down, that's okay. I'll put it back up again. Just a simple strategy of a parish team if you had a team of vocation people in your parish, they could be just gently putting out the message. The connectivity that could happen would be profound. I'm not starting a revolution. I'm starting a grass fire that I hope will turn into a blaze. Women have higher qualifications than men. Catholic women have higher qualifications than Catholic men in Australia, but there are more male managers. I'm dying to find the 2016 census to see what it's matching with this. Give you an idea in parishes. This comes from America. We don't have statistics like this in Australia. I hope one day. 2013 this was taken. The 2013 class of every guy who was ordained in the United States. Encouraged a priesthood in parishes. 67% of them said their parish priest encouraged them to ordination. A friend, a parishioner, and a mother and father. Friends and parishioners actually figure better than mothers and fathers do. And don't underestimate the parish priest. I'll talk to you a little bit later about this, but parish priests have often said to me, as Adam and I have gone round in the team, we don't know how to talk to young people about vocation. So we sat down and brainstormed, and I said, whatever you do, don't make a joke out of it, like, oh, you're too ugly, you'd never get married. Have you ever thought about becoming a priest? don't make a joke out of it, because this is serious. So we actually came up with this card. It says, I believe you would make a good priest. And I gave a handful of these to every parish priest in the Archdiocese of Brisbane. And I said, just, you don't have to say anything, just walk up to them and go, keep going. That's all you have to do. This is profound. That's just an idea that any parish can do. Can I have a let you know? Youth ministers are down here. Youth ministers are not the focus point for vocations. They're part of it. But a lot of people say, oh, you know, get the parish youth worker, you know, they'll, she or he will do all the work for vocations. No. It's this. Families and friends, parishioners, of those who discouraged a young man from becoming a priest. Friend, 55%. I don't know if they were female or not, but 55%. Other family members, mother, father, colleague, 19% of priests discouraged, actively discouraged a young man from entering the seminary. 19% of priests. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to be a priest? I've actually heard young men say that to me. My parish priest has said this. Youth minister, zero, that's okay. But this is significant. Families and friends have a big influence in young people's lives. That's where we need to encourage vocation. Prayer practices before entering the seminary, 68% said that they prayed the rosary, Eucharistic adoration, prayer group, Bible study, high school retreats, college retreats, Lectio Divina. Pietistic rather than a retreat experience or a youth group camp. Of those who participated in parish ministries before they entered, altar server, large. Reader, extraordinary minister of communion. So how do we enable and ennoble? Ennoble means give people the idea that this is okay, it's not a lost cause. How do we enable and ennoble? I believe very simple little programs, like a card that you give to young people, can help them to understand. I'd love to do one like this for marriage. I'd like to do one for single, maybe all the states of life. At the moment, we're just concentrating on priesthood here. Some of our other resources we have, and I won't go into them because Adam will do that later, is the encouragement of families. We're the only vocations office in the world that has brought out a vocation prayer book for children. This is not just about priesthood. It's about married life, single life, and the religious life. And it's a simple prayer book that then has the four states of life in the back. And then it talks about also our baptismal call. Okay, so Eucharist, baptism, Eucharist, confirmation, the four states of life that they can cover in. The only office in the world to bring something like this out.
we believe in encouraging families as a basis for vocation in a parish setting. Young people, involving them in pietistic practice. We have in the Archdiocese of Brisbane something called Leaven Hour every month, which is we gather at the cathedral and we have Mass and Eucharistic Adoration for vocations in the Archdiocese. Leaven Hour is significant and profound. I would love to have that in regions in the diocese, in the Archdiocese, maybe in every parish, just once a month, once every 6 months. Just have a Leaven Hour in your parish where you just invite people to come and pray for young marrieds, singles, the religious and the ordained, those searching for God in their life. Maybe have something afterwards, up to you. Encouraging families, encouraging the elderly. I'll tell you, share with you a quick story. When I was in a parish, I was had a youth group started. And the youth group's great. I was really encouraging this young man to play the congas. I love the congas. And he was really musical. Anyway, he was there, very first youth mass we're about to have, and he'd just taken the sheet off, and I was explaining to him what was going on, and he's just tapping away, and this old lady walked in and gave him the filthiest look, as if to say, you know, not only get out of my church, but, you know, go somewhere else like hell or something like that. It was the filthiest look. I saw it. And he said, no, Father Morgan, I'm not doing this. Thank you. Anyway, I said, no, I'm not going to put up with that. I went over to her and I sat down and I said, tell me, when you walked in, you may not be aware, because a lot of people aren't aware of their resting face, were you aware that you gave that young man the filthiest look I've ever seen in my life? And that he saw it, and he's not now going to play music in our church. She said, Father, no, my husband was in a blues band in Chicago for 34 years, and when I saw him, I thought, he wouldn't be as good as my husband. That was the look she gave. And she said, I feel so embarrassed. And I said, well, what are you going to do about it? She said, oh, and she, every month for the next 2 years, until she died, she would turn the music for him at every youth mass. They became best mates. Now, I tell that story because sometimes we can actually let an incident, a look or something, and not take the balcony perspective of it, not take what is going on here, we go, what is going on here, asking that question constantly. Don't let something go by. There's always a reason I've found behind people. So the elderly can be easily encouraged, just as families, young people and priests, of claiming vocations or vocation states of life. How many parishes actually celebrate marriage once a year and invite people who have been married in the parish to come back and maybe renew their marriage vows in a parish setting? How many parishes have actually had, if we believe sacraments would be celebrated in the midst of the worshipping community, how many marriages have actually been conducted in your church during the Sunday Mass?
Well, we do once a month.
Excellent. Not a marriage?
Yeah.
Excellent.
We invite a couple to the altar and for blessing.
Excellent. Let's do that. Or even if they're just preparing for that. I've done this when I was a parish priest, so I loved doing weddings on Sunday Mass. Loved it. How do we actually encourage people to do it? Maybe it's not having a wedding, because some people, they say, oh, well, it's not baptism, first communion, to begin with. So they might get a bit thingy about that, yeah. But how do we say, not once a year, say, all the couples come back, or couples who are preparing for marriage, let's just end up present them to the community. Maybe single people, encouraging them in their ministry and their life and what they're trying, sharing a two-minute reflection at the end of Mass about what they're doing. Maybe it's an elderly couple talking about, yeah? So just to give you a little bit of an idea, I think the interplay between parish and diocese or archdiocesan vocations team is important. It's not our office that is getting vocations. It's the parish that needs to encourage that. And the parish is where the coal place is. So I will give all I can to parishes. I actually preach in a parish every Sunday, different parishes, every Sunday about vocations. And I encourage priests to preach about vocation, to talk about their own vocational story. And
to support them, once a month we have a meeting called Concilium. So we have a house started in the Archdiocese, which is called Canale House, where young men actually live in the house and they discern priesthood in their life. And they live there for 12 months. They go on to the seminary, or they go and, you know, get on with their life, being through marriage, or single, or religious. So it's a hub for the Archdiocese, and having a hub is very important, where young people can feel as if they're not discerning alone, say, in priesthood. So we have one called Concilium, where they can come to Canale House. I just explain. Voc Adventure, where we take young people away climbing mountains. I'm obsessed by that, but that's okay. Voc Adventure, the Levenauer, the Canale School of Leadership. I teach a Cert 4 in big building blocks of theology and church history, so people can gain an understanding of their church. Our Quo Vadis, which is our weekend that we have for priesthood discernment. But this came out of a brainstorm one day, the V9, which means Vocations Novena. And the V9, we encourage the Archdiocese to pray, every parish, to pray every Sunday for 9 weeks for vocations. And then we celebrate National Vocations Awareness, the Sunday for married, single, and then religious and priests and deacons the next weekend. That 9 weeks of leading up to that, that's, parishes feel very tangible about that. Our office will also give out newsletters every quarter, so, and they're called sound bites. So priests can stand up and someone says, well, how many seminarians we got? Or what are seminarians learning? Or who's doing what? And they have a sound bite that they can give to people about vocations. We need to equip people with the message. And parishes need to be actively seeking that, not just the office. I can give out a lot of information, but it doesn't seem to be parishes are passing it on. How do we also do this is we ask parishes to form a vocations team. One or two people in every parish who I can send things to, or your vocations office can send things to, and they'll actually make it up onto the wall. They'll make it up onto the billboard. They'll make it up onto the parish notice board. The programs and all the posters and everything that we give out constantly aren't lost. So just one or two people who can be the vocations coordinator. Make sure things are walking with young people, helping them understand.
And so I wanted to share just a little bit about young people and youth culture. And this isn't about boxing young people in and saying this is how we can contain you, but it's about understanding young people's world. I think, again, it's that perception. What are the things that young people are dealing with? How are they interacting with the world? And so Father Morgan's already mentioned that our largest Catholic population is in our teenagers, are in high school. Generation Y, these are the young people born from about the mid-80s to the mid-90s. Those are flexible dates, people define that differently. But their formative experiences were September 11, consoles and gaming like PlayStation and Xbox, PC, social media, reality TV and Google. They desire flexibility and freedom. They want to work with an organisation or a boss rather than work for. And they're digital integrators, which means that as they've grown up, new technologies have been invented and they've been able to integrate that into their lifestyle, into the way they interact with the world. Generation Z was born after 1995 and their formative experiences were the global financial crisis, the development of mobile devices, tablets, iPads. They've been able to produce their own media. So Instagram is an app that is really popular amongst this generation where they're able to post their pictures and design it and put all sorts of different artistic flair to that. Cloud computing. I don't even understand what the cloud is, but this generation has grown up with the idea that all this information can be held somewhere in some cloud. And virtual reality and 3D printing are emerging technologies as well. They desire security and stability, and they're digital natives. So they've been born into this technology, and from the time that they're born, they're able to pick up an iPad and know how to use it. I've heard so many stories from my friends that are married and have have just had children and their little babies are able to pick up an iPad and be able to work it. And Generation Alpha, this is the next generation, they're being born now. So imagine they're being born into a world where virtual reality is just reality, where 3D printing is again another reality, where all this technology is nothing new to them. But I'll share this, again, not to box young people in, but it's to say that this is their world. Technology is huge for them, and social networking, all the different things that they're interacting with on their devices, it's actually about engaging with community on all levels. And so it's an invitation for us as parishes to think about, well, how does our community engage with these young people in the way that they're engaging with the world? And it also says that even though they're young, they have had significant experiences or they've witnessed significant experiences in the world. And so these are four things that Adam came up with that you need to know about young people. Young people aren't selfish, and I think that's another perception that's probably poorly attributed to them, but they're constantly immersed in community. The other day, I was walking into work, I had my earphones in, I was listening to a podcast. You know, so content that's created, shared online, but this podcast, this recording, it comes out of a community, an online community, that share their different discussions and questions, and from that, this online talk shows produced, and so the community is constantly engaging through this. And someone made the comment, oh, you know, young people, you've all got your earphones in, you're so, antisocial, and actually I was engaging with the community, but not in the way that we would normally think. So young people are constantly immersed in community. They're not careless, but they do have a strong sense of justice. And we see this whenever an online campaign about a social issue, and young people get behind it and they share about it and they find all sorts of creative outlets to promote those different social campaigns. So they're actually quite aware of what's happening in our world and they do care about it. They're not lazy. They think and act creatively. And again, all these technologies are allowing them different outlets to express themselves. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, these are ways that they're able to tell their story, tell their life journey, share that with other people and draw inspiration from each other. They're always creating and always telling story with each other. And young people aren't waiting to be invited. They're ready to be recognized. And for me, what this means is that sometimes we treat young people like they've got a junior Holy Spirit. But actually, the common age for confirmation in most places is 8. So from the time that they're 8, they're actually full members of our church. They've got the gifts of the Holy Spirit. But we treat them like, they're not full members, but actually they are. And so it's about recognizing, well, they're not just add-ons to our parishes, they're not just people that we have to think of creative ways, but they're actually a part of who we are as a community. And so how do we recognize that and allow them to express their membership in our communities, especially in our parishes?
So my friends, how many parishes, if Adam just said online media, iPads, they're looking at something like this constantly, how many parishes actually have a TV screen turned on the side so it looks like an iPhone in their foyer? Because the young people, I think, will take more notice of a scroll on a TV screen than they will of a notice board. I would highly encourage that. Just one could be all your notices. And I think young people will take notice, especially in about vocational material. Make it look like an iPhone. Okay. So I just wanted to share with you a few things. I'm a military chaplain, have been for 15 years. My commanders often ask, what's the bluff? I walk in, I put their books down or something like that, say, okay, men, what's the bluff? And the bluff is the bottom line up front. What's the bottom line up front? Adam and I would like to give you the bluff today. The bottom line up front is lead with the beautiful. Don't bash young people over the head with vocation. Don't bash people over the head with vocation. Let them see that vocation is beautiful, that your priesthood manifests beauty, love, and conciliation and spiritual gifts, that your marriage is something to delight in, that your single life actually has purpose. Start with the beautiful and then introduce the doctrine. Mother Teresa constantly said that. Feed them, then talk to them about Jesus. Start with the beautiful first. Well, proclaim with ardor. Calvin Will said that today. Proclaim with ardor. Proclaim with passion what you believe in. Jesus is risen from the dead. The Paul in Athens debate, I'm for Paul, I'm for Apollos. No, I'm for Jesus. The church has had 20 meetings. Vatican II was the largest and longest meeting ever held in the world. 1,000 people attended for over 4 years. We've had enough of meetings. Okay, they're important. But the proclamation, the proclaim is vital. Pulpits are for nourishing, not beating. Tell the great story. I love doing biblical study with people and explaining scriptures to them. I've been studying for years, over 14 degrees. I don't tell you that to say how wonderful I am, but I'm passionate about understanding and learning. But telling the great story of Jesus Christ and our biblical tradition. We are a community. Our hearts are restless until it rests with thee. St. Augustine. So make sure everything is God-centeredness. We don't just sit in a corner begging for the world to take us seriously. We don't sit in the corner waiting for the world. What Catholic capital have you got that you'd like to invest? I'm not talking about money. Robert Putnam, a great social analyst in America in the 70s and 80s, wrote a book called Bowling Alone. And he said, what is the social capital that we invest? Because people are just doing their own thing. Volunteer groups are going down the tube. Are we investing social capital anymore? I'd like to call are we investing Catholic capital anymore. If your parish finance book does not have a section in it called youth, then I wonder where your heart is. If your parish finance book doesn't have a section called vocation, I wonder where your heart is. But if you have something called parish faith, we have something called building and maintenance only. God is not in competition. Ever heard of Thor, the Greek gods? If you pray to the Greek gods, they get stronger. So if you sacrifice, they get even stronger. Our God doesn't need that. Our God wants a relationship. Our God doesn't really need us, but created us for that wonderful relationship. And so our God's not in competition with anything else. Our God just loves us. And that love is a response that we give back.
So this is a question that we have been putting out all across the Archdiocese of Brisbane, even different parts of Australia. The phrase quo vadis, a Latin phrase which comes from a story of St. Peter leaving the gates of Rome. This is after the crucifixion and the resurrection. He's been leading the church in Rome. There's persecutions happening. He tries to escape. And he has a vision of Christ entering back into Rome. And Peter says to the Lord, quo vadis, Domine? Lord, where are you going? And so that's the question that we've adopted, promoting vocations across the Archdiocese and across Australians. Where are you going? We ask that to individuals, but perhaps we can ask that to our parishes. Where are you going as a parish? If we don't talk about vocations, if we don't own our vocations, where are our parishes going? And so our office in Brisbane is responsible for creating all sorts of resources, opportunities, and giveaways to help that conversation continue. Conversation about vocation. And so we do have some freebies here that you're more than welcome to take. And if you do miss out on anything, please hop onto our website. All our resources are there and available for purchase. But Father Morgan here is modelling some of our stuff.
Our Vocare magazine, Vocare, the Latin word for call. You're welcome to take it. We've got some examples. Actually, the Quo Vadis wristband, please take that. It's all for you, free today. And our Mercy Rosary wristband. Oldies love this. They can wear it. They won't lose it. It won't hurt them. But these are really good resources. The children's book, we do sell it. But for you, there's free examples there to take back. Just go to our website and you can buy any of this stuff. Also,
We'd love to give you our free pen, any of these cards, you're welcome to take them. The DLs are here, which is one on God's call, just generally God's call in people's lives, one on marriage, how to get married, a vocation prayer we give out, and on the priesthood. Okay, so you're welcome to take any as resources, ideas, come chat to us if you'd like to more. Every good person has always written a book and always fobs it off at a conference and that. But I have two books. This one is Up the Beat Track I wrote, Spiritual Reflections for Every Day of the Year. We sell it online, it's $20. There are three copies there, you're welcome. Or 100 of my climbing stories. Okay, and great Father's Day gift. Okay, but these are for sale, they're $20 each. And if you don't have any more, you'd like any of this, please go to CatholicPriesthood.com. And any help we can be, we've even got an online portal now for the curriculum education on vocations for parishes. So we'd like to end with a prayer with you.
So we'll pray together. Take, Lord,
and receive all my liberty, my memory, my understanding, my entire will, all that I have and possess. Thou hast given all to me. To thee, O Lord, I return it. All is thine. Dispose of it wholly according to thy will. Give me thy love and thy grace, for this is sufficient for me.
Thanks, everyone. God bless. Pray for our team. We'll pray for your team.
Thank you. Okay.
That was Father Morgan Batt with Fostering Vocations in the Heart of the Parish. This presentation was part of the Reclaim 2016 conference on the theme, On a Mission of Mercy, Evangelizing Parishes, which was hosted by Broken Bay Diocese, Australia. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.